Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Some county clerks are raising security concerns over an email they received from a Republican-hired investigator looking into the 2020 elections. And there's a new COVID-19 testing requirement for state workers. Plus, the new effort by Republican lawmakers to give parents more control over what their child's being taught in the classroom. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 17th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
So, J.R., we have another update, I guess, to this election investigation. We keep talking about it every week. But there was this questionable email that was signed by former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman. And he was asking clerks for specific things. But there was questions raised about it, security questions, by some county clerks because of who it was sent from. Let's first listen to those county clerks' concerns, and then we'll get into what Gableman was specifically asking them for.
4 years ago, you know, we had a recount in Dane County that was triggered by Jill Stein, the Green Party. And at the time I said, our elections are secure. There is nothing wrong with them. The vote total will not change. And you can't say, oh, the modems were hacked or whatever they were saying. Same kind of stuff. Honestly, 4 years ago, I've been consistent, said the same thing this year. We're going to have a recount. Nothing's going to change. That's what happened. But we've moved from sore loser to something much more dangerous. This is clearly a pattern of wanting to destabilize our democracy for partisan gain, and it's very concerning to me and should be to everyone else.
At some point in time, if Mr. Gableman requests information to be handed over, he's asking for it to a Gmail account. I mean, you know, these are elections we're talking about. Everything needs to be extremely secure. We've had no real communication from Mr. Gableman other than this strange email. So when the Legislative Audit Bureau conducted their audit, they reached out to us, asked to meet with us, and took the time to learn about elections. And so we're not seeing that same level of professionalism at this point in time.
So as you just heard, Dane and Milwaukee County really just questioning this email. And Gableman was asking, what was attached to the email was a letter from Gableman who's asking for records and evidence related to the election and if anything was, you know, tossed out or destroyed to let him know. Also asked about voting equipment as well. But it was from a John Delta Gmail account. So when you think of these security concerns, the county clerks that I spoke to, they said they're not going to respond to it. But first, just tell me a little bit about what you thought of this request and just the questions raised around it.
Well, remember, he first sent the request to the Elections Commission last week. So same deal, Gmail account sent to members of the Elections Commission and the administrator, Megan Wolf, asking the commission to preserve records, which was an interesting request because the commission doesn't preserve records, local clerks do. So Ann Jacobs, who's a Dem appointee and the chair of the commission at a hearing last week, kind of mocked the letter saying he should pay attention to how elections are run and go check with the locals. Now we're at the locals. It's interesting because, one, there are all kinds of questions raised about Gableman's investigation in the first place, right? Like, what's he doing? What's he after? Now you have this kind of odd request with the Gmail account. He's also working with, according to the Associated Press, a Trump attorney, or attorney who was in the Trump administration who claimed the election was stolen. He's also talking to, apparently, this guy who, Dr. Shiva, I'm going to butcher his last name, but who ran for U.S. Senate in Massachusetts, lost the GOP primary by a million votes and claimed, or like 20%, I'm sorry, and then claimed Massachusetts destroyed a million ballots. He also appeared at Mike Lindell's much maligned symposium in South Dakota. It's like kind of what's going on here? And to people I talked this week, the word amateur hour came up, that you're not stealing confidence about what's going on. Now, the best defense I heard for Michael Gableman is, if you want to understand the conspiracies and knock them down, you have to talk to those espousing them to try and see what you need to find out to say, look, here's what we found. There's nothing there. The issue is, though, the people who truly believe the election was stolen, if Michael Gableman comes back with a report that says nothing was amiss in terms of the machines or how ballots were counted, the people who are convinced it was stolen will say, aha, the conspiracy is so deep, either Gableman can't find it or he's in on it. Like, that's where we're at right now with people who believe the election was stolen. Now, again, as we've said many times on the show, there is a legitimate question to be discussed about legally. Did the Elections Commission give the right advice to clerks about filling in embassy information? Was the indefinitely confined status abused by people? Good questions to be asked. Lawyers can debate that, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of machines, et cetera, we had a hand recount in Milwaukee and Dane counties, and nothing really changed. Now, very small changes actually improved Joe Biden's margin in those counties. There's been nothing yet to suggest there is an actual conspiracy theory afoot to change ballots or to throw off the count. What is Gingham going to find, and what's he after?
And what he's asking for, too, was a lot about the data on these voting machines. And that's why the county clerks were kind of criticizing Gableman for not understanding the process, because nothing is actually stored on the machines. It's more of a memory stick.
Yep.
So it goes on to these county clerks almost in a sense just kind of dismissing Gableman's request, because they say, well, he doesn't even understand how the electoral process works here in Wisconsin. So go learn about it first, and then we'll maybe respond to you. Dane County Clerk Scott McDonald did say the only reason he would respond to something if courts got involved. So if there was a court order, if there was a subpoena, then he would maybe, you know, dish out some information. But right now, a lot of county clerks are kind of just sitting back and saying, we're not sure we're going to respond to this request.
And the position that Galen's in, the same one that Robin Voss is in, where you're not going to placate those people who believe there's something amiss about the election, and you're giving fodder to Democrats who are saying this thing is not on the up and up and is just fueling the fire of the big lie about 2020.
All right. Well, let's move on, because we'll probably keep talking about this from weeks to go on. Finally, after several weeks of, I know myself, asking the Evers administration, are you going to require state workers to get vaccinated or go under weekly testing? DOA actually just came out this week saying we will require unvaccinated state employees to have negative COVID-19 tests. Now, the rules apply, of course, if you're working from home and you're unvaccinated, it wouldn't apply to you. But if you're in these state-run facilities, we don't know how the program is going to work, but you're going to have to get a weekly test. There was some pushback. One of probably the only Republicans that we heard from was Senate Majority Leader Lemahieu. And here's his quote. The state Senate will explore all options within our authority to protect the rights of Wisconsinites, to prevent further abuses by overreaching executives, be from Governor Evers or President Biden. Of course, he's calling out President Biden, too, because he also is announcing a whole host of industries and employers who have more than 100 employees that they'll have to be required to get the vaccine. So I guess we knew this was coming. We don't really know how it's going to work. Just we're getting some pushback. So what's your take on it?
There are 34,000 executive branch employees, contractors, and interns this would apply to. It doesn't apply to UW employees who are kind of in a separate system. It's not really a vaccine mandate, but it kind of puts pressure to do it, because if you don't get the vaccine, you have to go through the testing. They had asked state employees by a week and a half ago to report their status. They had 87% compliance with that. Of those who responded, 70% had gotten the vaccine. Now, why I bring that up is it's not really accurate to say that 70% state employees have the vaccine, because
right.
of those 13% that didn't respond, not sure how many of those guys have the vaccine. They're trying to pressure people toward that. Polling on the president's vaccine mandate has ranged from slightly underwater to fairly popular. But what we're seeing is, I'm going to tie this back politically to California. Democrats are looking at what happened with Gavin Newsom and how he beat back the recall and saying, we should have a stiffer backbone about the vaccine and mandates and COVID-19. The public is tired of COVID-19. We're not going to win this battle until we put more pressure on this. We've proven we can win, albeit in a state that's plus 30 for Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
They're feeling like we have some ground here to be more forceful on mandates. The question is, in a place like Wisconsin, where it's more of a 50-50 state, is that going to work?
And the legality question came up again. The conservative law firm group WILL, Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, who has challenged multiple of Evers' executive orders throughout the pandemic. I spoke to Rick Essenberg, the president and general counsel for WILL. He said they're not really going to touch this. They're not going to file a lawsuit. And their reasoning behind that is because Evers' powers within state employees is completely different when it comes to him enacting like a mask order or a vaccine requirement statewide. But this leaves the door open if Lemahieu wants to take legal action, and it seems like he's considering that right now.
Yeah, and, you know, Republicans are trying to find the right fight on COVID-19. This may be one that's more in their wheelhouse going forward.
And let's move on to I don't know. Some people thought it was a surprise. I kind of got the text late on, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday, one of candidates who was looking to run for governor, Bill McCoshin, decided that he is not going to run for governor. He was a longtime GOP strategist. He basically said, well, he's confident that he could have raised the money. The reality is that he lost a lot of time trying to close the sale of our primary business. And I say it was a little bit of a surprise, maybe to some, maybe the public, maybe not reporters, is because he just sold this. Mm-hmm. And it was anticipation once he sold this firm, then he was going to go, you know, all in on the governor's race. So I guess what was your take on that?
So Capital Consultants is his firm. It's been around for he's been there for 29 years as a lobbyist. This deal's been in the works since the spring. And it was viewed as a key step for him to open the door to running for governor, because you can't really have a lobbying firm running for governor. It took a lot of time. There are a lot of ethical questions. Like, for example, the way lobbying, they call them lobbying books, your clients, when you sell your clients to another firm or acquired by a firm, often you get compensation if those clients stick around, right? Like, you don't want to buy a lobbying firm and lose all the clients the next day. If McCoshin became governor and was being compensated by a lobbying firm while he's in office, how would that work? So, well, you know, some hurdles to go through. So that was definitely was an issue, was getting this approved. But the bigger thing for McCoshin is he's been a lobbyist for 29 years. And talking to people throughout the entire process of Bill McCoshin considering running for governor, the question was, how do you run for governor as a lobbyist? Now, we talk to lobbyists all the time. It's an honorable profession to us. The Republic, not so much, right? They're not big fans of lobbyists. And if you look at the Republican base right now, especially after the Trump stamp that he put on it, a more populist base, much less establishment, how do you make the argument of, I am part of the swamp, I'm going to go run for governor? Now, the pushback I got from some Kosh folks is, hey, he can make the argument of, I know the swamp, I know how it works, I alone can fix it, a la Donald Trump saying, I alone can fix Washington, D.C. I don't know that was going to be a convincing argument. And he just wasn't as far advanced as Rebecca Clayfish, who's been running basically for, well, really since November of 2018.
Right,
if we're honest about things, he's been running for a while, he was far behind. Don't forget, McCoshin also is owner of Janesville hockey team. They're in the middle of trying to build a new arena down. It's a sports complex, indoor sports complex in Janesville that would be home to the hockey team. He has other irons in the fire. It just seemed like this was not the right thing, and he wasn't going to close the gap to Clayfish anytime soon.
And it was weeks before he released this 5-minute get to know me type of mm-hmm. video. So there's a lot of anticipation behind this. But like you said, too, it was. What was the big lingering question is where he was going to align himself with Trump. But he always touts himself as that, you know, I worked with Tommy Thompson. I was on his cabinet after that. And when he made his announcement, I think over Twitter, he had kind of a statement. He also suggested for Republicans to create a competitive primary to strengthen their efforts to beat Governor Tony Evers. What do you think his message really behind there? Because we only still really have about one front runner right now, which is Rebecca Clayfish on the Republican side.
He pointed to recent history. So 1986, Tommy Thompson won a 5-way primary, then state representative Tommy Thompson won a 5-way primary, beat Tony Earl. 1978, Lee Dreyfus beat the GOP-backed Bob Caston, who went on to beat Acting Governor Martin Schreiber. 2006, Scott Walker dropped out of the primary against Mark Green in the spring of 2006. Green ran basically unopposed and lost to Jim Doyle. Now, the caveat there is 2006 was a bad year for Republicans. 86, good year for Republicans in Wisconsin. It's not like it was just because of the primary. It was the environment. At the same time, Rebecca Clayfish has always been in the shadow of Scott Walker. Now, in 2012, she was on the ballot by herself in the recall election. They ran separately. But she's always been kind of like overshadowed by Walker because he was the governor. This is her first time in the spotlight. So the question becomes, okay, how are you going to fare when the spotlight is firmly on you and not just as the running mate, but as the top person? Would a primary help sharpen her answers to questions, defend off the attacks that are inevitably going to come? Possibly, but without somebody serious or really a big challenge to her, how is she going to sharpen those skills between now and next November?
And we'll wait and see, too. The lingering question is now around Kevin Nicholson, businessman in Wisconsin, whether or not, if and when, right?
He's running the questions which office he's going to run for.
Exactly. Another First Lady visited Wisconsin, or excuse me, First Lady visited Milwaukee. Yes, of course, Wisconsin. But the bigger picture here of her visit, she went to some schools in the Milwaukee area talking about the, you know, touting vaccines, mask wearing, ways to protect, you know, students as they head back to the classroom. But this comes as, you know, more than 300 schools in Wisconsin have confirmed two or more cases of COVID-19. That's according to DHS. So the bigger picture here is the ongoing struggle around politics of mask wearing and vaccines and how do you keep these schools open. I mean, we're also seeing more political debates when it comes to school board meetings and people deciding to re-implement mask orders or just put them in place because things are getting out of control in some senses.
So my kids go to Madison schools. They have a mask mandate in place. Kenosha put one in place. There are parents in Kenosha who were so incensed by this that they were encouraging kids not to go to school today. Today's a key date for schools because it is a date that the Department of Public Instruction takes enrollment. That dictates how much state aid you get because that's your official number of kids enrolled in your school. That would hurt the school district, obviously. You're seeing fights in various places about this. Barb Dietrich, a state representative from Oconomowoc, Republican, just unveiled a new bill that basically said if you have a district where you don't like the mask or vaccination policy, you could open enroll your kid or put him or her into school choice. That would be a break from state law, which right now there's a window in the spring each year to open enroll your child, different school district. I don't think it's going to pass Governor Evers, but it shows you that Republicans are trying to push back on what schools are doing, even if it's outside of their own districts.
And I did forget, let's hear a little bit from the First Lady from her visit in Milwaukee.
So I'm here today because your children matter to me, and they matter to the president. And my husband, Joe, is committed to being a partner to all of you. And that's why he released a bold plan last week to make sure that all of our schools can stay safe and open by helping to ensure that the adults and the students who surround our children are vaccinated. We can't know what the future holds, but we know what we owe our children. We owe them a promise that we'll do all that we can to keep their schools open and as safe as possible. We owe them a commitment to follow the science, and we owe them unity so we can fight the virus and not each other.
I do also want to get input from the Republican National Committee spokesperson. They responded to Jill Biden's visit, saying by no visit by her will erase the fact that the Biden administration is actively seeking to take away the rights of Badger Staters and their unconstitutional executive orders. You know, we've talked about the politics around this, too. We're also hearing from national educators, the National Education Association President Becky Pringle. She visited Madison schools as they went back to school this week. They were predicting a COVID-19 requirement for students. Now, that's something we haven't seen in Wisconsin, but it just goes on to the fact that there's schools and, you know, health departments are trying to do anything they can to incentivize people to just get the shot. But with that, you're just going to continue to see this backlash. Mm-hmm. And at what point, well, I'm not going to send my kid to school anymore. We've seen even just in Fort Atkinson, too, there was a 13-year-old that whose mother said contracted COVID-19 right before he died. That scared, I think, a lot of the school board members, saying maybe we should start taking some, you know, protocols here. So they did. But then again, you know, parents were walking up to Fort Atkinson this morning. We had a photog out there this morning. A lot of parents are taking their kids out of school.
Mm-hmm. And you're seeing parents who don't like these mandates saying that, you know, it's a detriment to my kids' health. They're not at that big of a risk, et cetera, et cetera. They should be able to kind of live life as it is. It's just the political divide that we've seen. It's become a very political issue, and it goes down to your kids as well.
Speaking about politics in schools, there was Assembly Education Committee on a bill that would allow parents to opt out their students from curriculum around gender and sexual orientation. The bill came very, very short notice. A lot of Democrats took a problem with that. The bill is getting fast-tracked in a sense as the legislature might be meeting in fall session in the coming weeks. Let's take a listen from one of the bill sponsors defending the bill. She's saying, you know, it's not an attack on the LGBT community. It's just to give parents a choice. Meanwhile, Democrats and those who testified said, you know, I kind of wish I had this option. I wish more teachers spoke about these issues when I was in school. So let's take a listen.
Students are exposed to things maybe at a very young age in an attempt to undermine a family value belief system that is detrimental to what parents and guardians are trying to teach their children. Parents need to know that that is happening. And so that is why I signed on as a second to increase that transparency and to increase the ability of parents to opt out, to opt their child out of instructional materials and curricular things that occur that they would object to.
I came from a family with very, very conservative beliefs. I did not know that being gay was an option. This information is beneficial. It would have helped me a lot as a kid. It doesn't harm people to know that gay people exist. Placing these limits is a direct attack on a kid's right to determine their identity. It can have really long-lasting detrimental effects. The ability to make a choice is really important, and kids should be given that information and, more importantly, time to process that information and come to the correct decision.
The GOP bill would also require school districts to first notify parents when these lessons are being taught. Therefore, then the parent can decide, well, I don't want you to participate that. You're going to stay home.
Interesting. We have this bill. We have critical race theory. Yeah. We have other kind of greatest hits coming from Republicans in terms like the conservative priorities. These bills are not going to get passed. Governor Evers, his spokeswoman, said that he will veto if this bill about education on LGBTQ issues comes up, that they will veto the bill. It's about getting a roll call vote and about trying to put Evers in the defensive about what he's vetoed, firing up the Republican base, and getting vulnerable members of the legislature on record about where they stand on these issues, because Republicans will run on them come next fall.
And like you said, it's kind of been this national issue too, and Republican talking base on the campaign trail that parents deserve to have a say, and the parents should be allowed to remove their kids and have a say of what is being taught in the classroom. Just like you said, it's kind of the series going along with critical race theory. But the Democrats, a lot of them argue, well, how do you know this is going on? Give me examples. You know, a lot of teachers who are on the education committees, you know, I never taught these things. And, you know, of course, you know, advocacy groups are saying this is important now. You know, our culture is shifting. It's more, you know, you could Google any of these things on your phone. Your kid's going to find out anyway. So those are kind of some of the arguments that we're hearing about these bills.
Much less controversial bills that moved in hearings this week would, for example, require districts to post on their websites detailed breakdowns of their finances, how they're spending their money. It's an example of Republicans trying to have more transparency in their minds over schools and what's going on, pushing on that. Now, we've seen some conservative pundits call for cameras in the classrooms to know what your kids are being taught. It all is born out of this kind of thought of, what are you teaching my kid? And what is going on, and why don't I have control over it? What books are in the school library? Mm-hmm. Are you teaching critical race theory, which we don't really have any examples of that in Wisconsin schools that I've seen so far. It's more of a college-level thing. We're going to have an informational hearing before the universities committee in the Senate next week about UW system and critical race theory. They're trying to crack down on what you're teaching. They're teaching the kids in the classroom.
All right, so, Jer, we got a few minutes left. Let's go down the Wisconsin stock picks.
So, Ryzen and Rebecca Clayfish, we talked about Nakashin getting out. So, okay, that's one good thing for her. She raised $1.2 million from individuals in the first 40 hours of her campaign, official campaign. And thirdly, she has a PAC now that's going to support her that can raise limited amounts of money and spend on her behalf. These are all good things. It's solidifying her status as a front runner. Right now, we've got John Mako, state rep from Ledgeview, who's considering it. Kevin Nicholson's thinking about U.S. Senate or governor. And then there's not a big drop-off from those guys to, if you look at like Jonathan Wickman, who a businessman who had talked about running in a failed recall effort of Governor Evers. He's out there, but there's not really a high-profile contender to challenge Clayfish right now, which is interesting that she's taking some positions she is already out of the gate. For example, she's on a radio show last week, said she signed a fetal heartbeat bill, which basically put an abortion after you can detect a heartbeat around 6 weeks. There's this great debate going on in Republican circles about if you could find a candidate who could espouse Donald Trump's policies without Donald Trump's baggage, would you have a winning coalition of those rural voters who like got jazzed up by him, but bring back the suburbanites who were turned off by Trump's personality? If that's your goal, how is backing that bill going to win back college-educated suburban women? Now, we've seen some polling that they're not big fans of bills like this, but I can't give you a blanket statement on Wisconsin of like what percent favors it versus opposes it. Mm-hmm. But here's an example of, if you're Clayfish, do you want to tack to your right and protect your flank against a possible challenge, or should you be more like focusing on moderate issues, more in the middle stuff to build out your team, your supporters, who are not just core support Republicans ahead of what could be a 50-50 election next fall?
Right. And mixed is Kevin Nicholson, who we've, of course, brought up a little bit earlier. He's the unknown what race he's going to get into. Yeah.
So in that, it's interesting, like talking to operatives, they feel like it's a slap in the face to voters that a guy's saying, I'm running for Senate or governor, because they're wildly different offices with different responsibilities. However, the average voter, is he or she paying attention right now to what this guy's toying the idea of like going from one off to the other? Really interesting, he dropped $1.5 million on TV to promote No Better Friend. Now, that's his nonprofit conservative advocacy group. He's been doing events with that. In the TV ad, he touts like what the group stands for, and it's finally crazy for you. It looks a lot like a campaign ad, however, Emily, backing Kevin Nicholson, promoting him. It's probably not a coincidence that Becky Clayfish got in a week and a half ago, and he's now like up on the air with this TV ad. Coincidence happened in politics, but not very often.
Right.
It's like reminding people who he is. He ran for Senate in 2018. The question is,
name recognition there, yeah.
Can Nicholson close the gap? And we all have these hearts in the Senate, right? Ron Johnson, what's he going to do? When's he going to announce? We don't know. People are guessing what he's going to do.
A lot of people are guessing now. Well, he's all in, right?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Johnson takes until February to decide. Can Nicholson wait until past the holidays to decide about running for governor? Could he get into the governor's race? And then Johnson says, I'm not going to run, and hop over to the Senate race. I mean, like, there are all kinds of unknowns for Nicholson ahead of him. He's got a deep-pocketed backer in Dick Uihlein, who backed him in 2018. That would help, you know, close the gap with Clayfish potentially if he had that kind of resources. But he's in this kind of interesting no-man's land right now of which race he's going to run for.
And falling this week is State Senator Steve Nass. Because we were talking about a little bit before we got on the air about his UW mask fight, yeah, and their COVID-19 policies.
So we talked about what's going on with, you know, the governor and the vaccine mandate, basically a testing mandate on the vaccine, and President Biden with his. It's been deathly quiet from leadership in the legislature, in the Senate and the Assembly, from Nass's call a week ago to file a lawsuit to make UW submit its COVID policies to the legislature for review. When I'm talking to people, they tell me that silence is deafening. It sends a message of Nass is not getting his way. He did not build consensus in the caucus to get behind him before he issued this, you know, call for a legal fight. And it's easier for Republicans to latch on to Joe Biden's mandate that affects 100 million workers in this country about getting a vaccine is a fight with UW about masks. What you're more likely to see people tell me is the legislature signed on to an amicus brief, for example, if there's a lawsuit challenging the Biden administration's policy. There are 24 Republican attorneys general who sent a letter to Biden this week saying, either amend this rule or we're going to sue you. You could see a scenario where a lawsuit's filed, legislature files his friend of the court brief, and that's their vehicle to fight the vaccine mandates more than taking on UW, which it's a little bit dicier situation.
And we'll see what comes in the weeks to come.
Yes.
All right, Darren. That's it for this week on Rewind. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Thanks for joining us.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.